Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast.
Originally founded in 2010, as two champs and a chum, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community.
This is Season 12 of the White Book Podcast.
To our new Marvel Snap podcast.
Name still TBD.
East Coast Avengers.
I'm willing to do Great Lakes. I'm all in on Great Lakes.
That's a real thing.
He's willing. We can't just steal Marvel's trademark. They will sue us. Disney is litigious.
Okay, that's fair. How about Flyover Avengers?
No, because no. We're the East Coast Avengers. You're just pseudo East Coast.
That feels like a stretch.
You are closer to the East Coast than you are to the West Coast.
I mean, that's true.
It's
by a small margin, though. I'm really not far from the geographic center of the U.S.
All right. Here we go. We're gonna do it. Maps. Springfield, Missouri.
Ooh, thank you.
Directions to. Let's say San Francisco.
8,000 hours.
It would be a... Oh, it's loading. So far it's loading. 28-hour drive.
Oh, geez.
To San Francisco.
It's not terrible.
It's definitely... And it is 1,912 miles. And we'll go to Washington, D.C., it would be a loading, 16-hour and 12-minute drive, 1,334 miles.
There we go.
You should
16
drive.
Hours is much more reasonable.
It is. And that's like, wait, where did you have him driving?
San Francisco.
No, the other way.
Washington, D.C.
What about like Atlanta? I bet you that's even shorter.
Yes.
I mean, Atlanta? Shorter. Oh, much.
Also, Atlanta is also not on the East Coast. It is in the middle of Georgia. It's not exactly on the East Coast.
Georgia's the East Coast, therefore Atlanta's on the East Coast.
That is fair. But it is significantly closer to Springfield.
So I'm just saying, you're an East Coaster. We're the East Coast Avengers. Welcome to the East Coast Avengers talk about random TV shows.
We're actually the geography. We're actually the geography podcast now. It is a 10-hour drive. You could do it in a reasonable one-day drive to Atlanta from Springfield.
Oh, yeah, totally. Okay, bear with me, though. Other name ideas. Maybe Snap Judgment.
That is actually a
good one. About Snappin' Sons?
Decision. Snappin' Sons. Snapper Car. We'll just reference the esteemed
the wrong car company.
I vote Snappin' Sons. Then we move this to Twitch.
Snappin' Sons is very funny.
Sons. All I can picture now is the gangs in West Side Story snapping down the street.
It could be our intro song. Just a bunch of snaps. No one will ever get past the intro song. Except.
Well, it's much like the White Books, so that won't change much.
Will on himself.
Hey, according to David, Thrones proper is in the best place it has ever been. Ever. That's what David said.
Okay, so what's the first thing on our list here?
The end of Rings of Power, it looks like.
Okay.
How'd you guys like the Halbrand reveal?
Well, I learned... My heart was actually broken after watching that episode.
Oh, really?
Because I learned something. I was lied to one simply can walk into Mordor. That's what I at the end of Rings of Power.
Boromir didn't lie. He was just mistaken.
He was mistaken about which one. He didn't specify which one cannot. Simply.
It's true. It felt like so much of my life was full of lies.
Hey, listeners, I threw out my back, so if I make weird noises, it just means I adjusted myself and it hurt. Sorry.
This is the thing about me telling Aaron she should go to the doctor.
That's why he got slopped.
Yeah.
Because I don't have time. I just don't have time.
I feel you, man. I feel you.
I walked out of a union. I walked into a union meeting from a union meeting, and then I walked out of a union meeting into someone asking me for another union meeting.
Oh.
And then I had to teach 3 or 4 periods. It was, yeah, circle of hell. All right, speaking of circles of hell, Rings of Power. No, I actually really liked it. I thought it got better and better as the longer it went. I thought it started slow and then just continued to get consistently better.
I found Rings of Power to be firmly mid, as the children say.
I knew you were going to say that.
So, I was fine. Like, except for the literally Halbrand walking into Mordor at the end, it felt kind of like a personal, like, it felt like referencing the taking the hobbits to Isengard meme. Like, it was like too, like, on the nose of, like, memes about Lord of the Rings.
That's Lord of the Rings. That's what you do with Lord of the Rings. You don't like try and get clever. Like, here's a bunch of on the nose stuff.
What they try to do in that scene, though. Like, where Halbrand's literally just like walking on in the Mordor. Like, it was a little much.
Oh, it's fine.
But I thought it was fine. Like, it was fine.
I don't know if we have anything much more to add. The Halbrand reveal was cool. Gandalf was exactly who we thought Gandalf was. I didn't like the weird women showing up in the show.
The weird women, like
the three witches.
Weird sisters. Because keep in mind, I still haven't watched this, and I still don't care about spoilers. But are you talking? Man, like, my Greek memory is failing me. I was gonna name the mother, beats, maiden, and crone.
Yeah. So like, it's not actually them, but it's three. Like, it's the Lord of the Rings version.
That is it. I thought you were just saying weird as in unusual, but that's really what you meant.
No, like, three witches turn up to what ends up being Gandalf. I mean, spoiler, but, like, it's totally Gandalf, right? And are like, you're Sauron!
Spoiler, it's actually Palando?
Palando?
If I'm remembering his name right, one of the two blue wizards?
No, it's actually Gandalf.
No, it's 100% gonna be Gandalf. No, he, like, chills. With the,
like, they basically do everything but say literally the name Gandalf.
Well, if they didn't say the name, there's still time for it to be Palando.
They actually call him Istaril, I believe they do.
Well, Istaril's the name of the species. Like,
no, Istari, no, I think is
Istari. Yeah.
But I think Istaril is him. No, it's been a long time.
Mithrandir is all I remember, but I know that
Mithrandir. There you go. That's what I was thinking. No, that's just.
That's whatever. Not his, like,
totally fucking Gandalf.
Actual name?
Look. At the end of the day, it's Gandalf. Who's here way too early, and he's going to be homies with the hobbits. And that's
of course he's homies with the hobbits.
And like, that's going to explain why he likes them.
Ullurin is his actual name.
Oh, okay, well, whatever his
the
name is.
Well, to be fair, the very reputable source of the One Ring to Rule Them All wiki does not list him as Gandalf. It's not confirmed.
So there we go.
Very reputable source.
But like,
there's no time to be Palando. I'm actually Googling the Blue Wizards' names now, so I can make sure I'm not totally...
I don't think they're named, like, actually, in the books.
No, they are. They're okay, yes, Palando is one of the two. The other, it was Alatar.
So, I don't care about other wizards. Like, it doesn't even make sense that there are other wizards, like, at all, right?
Wait, why?
What?
In the original mythology, Because, like, the wizards came to Middle-earth to help because Sauron was taking over. And then literally two of them do anything. Everyone else is just, like, missing completely.
Well, I mean, that's partly the point. The Blue Wizards, the reason they're missing is they are presumably dead. They got killed.
They're immortal. I think that's the whole point of them.
Well,
they're kind of immortal.
Yeah. Theoretically.
They're mostly immortal.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings is stupid and we're thinking too hard about this. I think that the show was fun.
The show's fine. Like, it is... The only people who could really find Lord of the Rings of Power objectionable are horrible human beings. And
are you calling Sam a horrible human being?
Hold on. Or, like, unrepentant Tolkien nerds.
Ah, that's what he is.
That's what he is. Yeah. All right. The horrible human beings are the MCU people. All right. Who have been out in force these last couple of months. So. Yeah.
I concur. All right. We can move on to. I just want to get to Marvel Snap. Talk about your talk about your shitty dragon show.
What was the last episode we talked about?
Good. Actually, that is a good question. We did not put an episode number when we talked last time about House of the Dragon.
So it was the 10th or the 11th was the last time we talked about it. So that was a while ago. So the finale was the 23rd, right?
Sounds right. Yeah.
That means two episodes. The last one we talked about would have been the episode before the last episode featuring
the best episode. Viserys.
Death.
Okay.
Yeah, that was definitely the best episode. So it's basically the two-part finale, which is basically what the last two episodes are.
Yeah. Two halves of the coin of how everyone reacts afterward. They were fine, I think. They were solid. They just weren't as good as I thought episode eight was.
Yeah.
I mean, Jace's death, or not Jace, sorry, that was Luke. Luke's death.
Lucerys.
Was a big gut punch, I think, for a lot of folks, especially show-only folks. Mm-hmm. Now they're stuck on that hangar. It was interesting to see them kind of tweak that death to be...
Kind of tweak, Will. Like, it's a big change.
Okay. To tweak that death to...
Me.
What here? Let me get
I'm,
more.
I'm,
what
I'm
I was going
Martin,
to.
I'm
they
Martin
tweaked
nerd,
that to kind of tweak Aemond. He's not quite as horrible as a person now.
Yeah, he's yes. The tweak is to Aemond. It's a huge change to the event.
Yeah. There we go. So now he was just, you know, painfully tormenting his younger cousin. Nephew. And it got way out of hand. Still not great, but I can see how the show version of Aemond now is going to spiral into the depths of, kind of depravity that we see him at later in the novel.
Yeah. I mean, well, there's we are just like novel spoiling, right? We basically not. We've assumed that the listeners of the White Book have read Fire and Blood, right?
Yeah.
So I could just like say,
what's the White
Book? So like, it's going to make the next big thing, which is Blood and Cheese, like hit harder, right? Like it's already a really messed up thing, but it's supposed to be, I think, more like. Give like Aemond going kind of nuts in the second half of Dance of the Dragons, like a bit more like it's like a change of him rather than just like he's a giant dick from when he was a kid up to
right.
Which is fine. I didn't like the change, if I'm gonna be entirely honest. Like, I think particularly
you
the,
desperately
like, the
wanted to see one of the Baratheon daughters be a giant bitch, right?
Yeah, well, I also just like the dragons not listening to them is not really something that's established in either the show or the novels. It just like kind of felt like weird addition to me.
Like, Viserys had kind of been hinting at it earlier in this season, in the show context, with comments like, you know, we were foolish to think we could control the dragons and things like that. But
yeah, I don't know.
It was just kind of like his thing rather than like a show theme before this.
There's things I liked in the finale. I liked the green episode more than the black episode because they decided to end on more body horror. Like, I cannot believe how much body horror was on. It was in this season of House of Dragon.
Yeah, that really lingered. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. But Emmett Darcy, the actor who is who plays Rhaenyra, is excellent. Like, they really sold me on their version of the character being a natural continuation of the character in the first half of the show in the final episode. So I think their performance was one of the most outstanding performances of the whole season. In that finale, like, it was just very strong, I found.
Emma was good. It may just be because I was exposed to her first, but I think I still prefer Millie. But Emma was very good. And the episode in general, like, you know, the kind of powerful moment scenes that they set up did really land for me. You know, her crowning, Arik showing up with the crown and swearing his oath, right? That one was Arik.
Whichever one it is, I don't care. Like, they're not important characters.
Yeah. The only real important thing is they're twins on the Kingsguard and they wind up on opposite sides.
Yeah, like,
and that's it.
It's just like, yeah.
But it still, like, sold it to me, like, when he starts swearing his oath and stuff. Like, that was a powerful scene, I thought.
It was a good. I mean, I feel like I think this show, all of the it's, I mean, it's just good Game of Thrones again, right? Like, all of the political stuff is great. The acting is good. There's a lot of sometimes questionable adaptation choices and gross.
Yeah, and so, some scenes that at like best should have been half as long as they were.
Yeah,
and probably less than that.
So, I don't know. It's just good Game of Thrones. Like, it's like season 4 Game of Thrones. So, if you like season 4 of Game of Thrones, you should watch it. Like, that's sort of my take on House of the Dragon. Like,
now we only have to wait till, what, 2024 for season 2?
This time, 2024, yep.
Yeah. Oof.
Well, they weren't sure if it was going to succeed, so.
Yeah, that's fair.
How were they not sure it was going to succeed? They're still
because, my friend... The finale of Game of Thrones is one of the biggest pop culture disasters of all time.
Yeah,
like there's like almost no one, whether they are a hardcore Martin fan or a muggle, to use an outdated terminology, right, who has seen it, that doesn't hate it. Like, there are so few. It's not even divisive, like Last of the Jedi or Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness or whatever. Like,
The Rise of the Skywalker.
Yeah, it's like Rise of the Skywalker. But, like, Rise of Skywalker, very few people get, like, angry. Most people just forget Rise of Skywalker.
That's fair.
Like, yeah. People are still angry.
People dwell on season 8.
Yeah, like, just random people at work, if they're like, oh, you like Game of Thrones? It's like, oh, yeah, it was a big part of my life for a time. They're like, didn't you hate that finale? I'm like, damn. All you wanted to talk about earlier was basketball. But suddenly we're, like, in this nerdy-ass discussion about Game of Thrones. Okay, all right. I mean, this is where we are now. Like, that is just, like, it's a huge disaster. So I get HBO, like, hedging their bets.
I can't blame them. But I'm glad that it really, really panned out.
Yeah. But speaking of, I think, probably of what's current, now that She-Hulk is over, my favorite weekly television show, I definitely like more than House of the Dragon and Rings of Power, is Andor. Andor's really good. Like, really, really good.
I need to watch that. I was really enjoying it, and I stopped. And I don't even remember what was happening.
it's just ACAB. It's Star Wars, the ACAB show. Like, it's just like so impressive to me how political this show is. Like, I was like, what the fuck? It's, like, if this was an HBO show about El Salvador, like, people would be losing their fucking minds. But, like, because it's Star Wars, they're, you know, like, oh, yeah, yeah, of course, of course. Yeah, stick it, Rebel Alliance. Like, it's really good and, like, a really timely TV show for Star Wars. Let's remember, the last major thing from Star Wars was Rise of the Skywalker. All right?
The last major thing.
I mean, there've been multiple shows, right?
Boba Fett and the terrible Obi-Wan show.
That's fair. All right, all of those things sold me. Again, it's Star Wars. Most of Star Wars sucks. All right. Yes. I mean, Rogue One was fine to good. Like,
I liked Rogue One a lot.
Rogue One was my favorite
Star Wars movie since the originals, at least. Although, again, I really like The Last Jedi.
Yeah, Last Jedi is good. It has some weaknesses to it, but it's good.
It was not good, but we don't need to go down that road again right now.
That's okay.
But anyway, you should watch it. Will, are you watching it?
I've still only seen the first episode. We just had so many different things to keep up with. But now that more shows have kind of wrapped, I think we'll go back to Andor.
It's not true. You know how we know Will hasn't watched so many shows that he's keeping up with? Because there's like five things listed under this.
I mean, do you want me to really put on here like each episode of each of the sitcoms we've been working on every like episode?
Kind of. All right, we'll do that next week because we got to get to our actual topic of the week.
Oh my God. This is how we know we're doing the White Book. Aaron wants to talk about one thing.
Black Adam, right?
As possible.
He's been waiting.
I had a great transition for this. All right.
Oh, dang.
So I was going to be like, tell me how the power structure of the DC universe has changed.
Wait, did anyone notice that Andor is missing the butt? And or but.
Well, I will bores you. I'll be right back. Why Will tells you, not bores you, excuse me, about
ouch, Roy. Burning myself enough this episode that you didn't need to add to
I'm it. Actually, what I meant, it wasn't actually targeted towards you, Will. It's targeted towards Black Adam. I'm happy to pay my... you saw it, Glazer. That's even worse. Like, I'm happy to pay my HBO Max fee to see that movie, but I'm not spending it like $15 for however much a movie is to go see Black Adam. Oh my God.
Well, I don't know that I have much to say about the power structure, the DC universe changing, but I will say it was like 80% of a decent but not great Marvel movie.
Yep.
So like 80% of like Guardians 2.
Maybe. No, it was better than Guardians 2. Guardians 2 was atrocious.
Okay.
It was like 80% of Ant-Man.
Okay, that was going to be my next example case. That seems pretty good. Yeah, yeah, comparison-wise.
Like, I'm utterly fine with that. I am not sad I saw it. It was better than a good third of the Marvel movies I've seen.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not significantly worse than Black Widow. It's not significantly worse than, like...
Actually, it might be stronger than Black Widow as a, like...
Look, it's general, a general comparable area, right? Like, yeah, it's perfectly fine. Is it great? No. Am I going to remember anything about it in 6 months? Absolutely not.
Probably not.
Maybe Hawkman.
Do I regret that I went to see it in the theater? No.
And we also got up to Roy's point, $10 a ticket, which helps.
Yeah, that always helps.
Yeah. So, look, it felt very Rock, and Rock's humor is very Marvel in the first place, right?
Yes. All the humor in the movie, I thought, really landed. The problem were the really, like, super serious lines, which all came off really cringy.
I mean, there was just a lot of superhero punch superhero. Like, yeah. Marvel does, like, two... action scenes in a movie, maybe three, right? Like,
it's three. It's three. It's always three action
scenes. Is it always three? Okay. So, like, Black Adam may have only had three, but it felt like it had 12.
Yeah. Yeah. It did feel that way. And it was kind of like a weird, inconsistent, like, way to depict powers, too, I thought. Like,
Wow, in a rock movie?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Pick one way that you're going to cinematically show what Black Adam is doing, and just stick with that. Like the initial kind of pop, so to speak, like a flash, like blur kind of thing to the next point where he would, you know, throw somebody or punch him or whatever. And then like a flash to the next spot. Like I thought that kind of worked, but they didn't stick with that. And it got kind of weird when they were, all over the place with the CG effects.
The Rock / Black Adam lose a fight in the movie. Not gets pushed away or have to run off and go save someone have to retreat. No,
but the idea is that
it's the fucking Rock. He can't lose a fight.
Black Adam doesn't lose fights anyway.
Well, I mean, Spider-Man doesn't lose fights. Superman loses fights. Like you lose the middle
plot.
No, you always lose the middle fight of your movie. Spider-Man loses the middle fight of his movie. Iron Man loses the fight
the way he's supposed to lose.
The way the Rock loses fights, which is he's forced to retreat, right? Or he has to go save someone.
It doesn't even play it that way. That's why I'm saying it's baked into the plot of this movie. Mm-hmm. Like it is established that he's kind of outclassed everybody else and that like he is his own villain. So I guess maybe he does lose to his own conscience is okay. Kind of the struggle that it reduces that to.
Okay. Do you know what that reminds me of? Have you ever seen Red Notice,
Will? Oh no, I have not.
Okay. I want to say about Red Notice, because but it's too big of a spoiler if you ever think you're actually going to watch it.
Okay.
But it's like, you think at a certain moment, it's like, oh wow, it's breaking from the Rock formula.
Uh-huh.
But it's not. And it's okay. Just like, it's like when you get to the end of the movie, you're like, oh god damn it. Like, of course, it has to be the Rock can't lose. He just, even in when he's the villain of that Fast and the Furious movie, they fight to a standstill and then Rock switches sides. Like it's just like, oh my God. Like I can't with the Rock. Like it's just too much the same shit, no matter what window dressing you put on it. Like,
yeah. Well, at least in this defense, it was almost 50% a Dr. Fate movie. And he does lose for what it's worth. But he was still great. I came out of this desperately wanting two things. One, a Dr. Fate standalone movie, maybe like set in the 40s and really play up the period piece vibe or something. And maybe 30s. I don't know if they want to do World War II all over again. And a full-on like JSA ensemble movie. Like if you're going to pull in somebody like Brosnan to give me a honestly fantastic Dr. Fate, then like I want to see the other big guns. Give me like a Liam Neeson, Alan Scott or something, Ralph Fiennes. I don't know, like they could do some cool stuff.
Whatever. I thought the movie was fun and dumb, and you've officially put more thought into it than I have.
Yeah. But fun and dumb is pretty accurate.
All right. What else we got?
In the watch section, The Munsters. We watched the Munsters reboot on Netflix last night. The Rob Zombie directed Munsters, which I was really not sure how that was going to pan out. But I have to say, I'm pleasantly surprised. It very much felt like a cheesy 60s sitcom done with, I don't know, modern effects. So I loved it. Just, you know, beware that you are getting a very dad joke level of comedy for the whole thing. But yeah, I dug it.
Assume. All right. Who read books?
I read not one, but two books.
Wow, good job, Will.
I know.
Are you supposed to have a birthday or something?
Impressive for me. Yeah. I was supposed to. That's a whole different thing that I could slop. Let's go with, did Will get guilted into working on the day he had already requested off, i.e. his birthday last week? The answer is yes. But anyway, the books. So, listeners of the show may know that I'm a big fan of the Magicians series by Lev Grossman, which I long ago, I think, described as kind of Harry Potter with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. You can also throw some Narnia in, but that was kind of the short thing. Now that I have read these other two books, I think I want to amend that a bit. So I'm going to amend The Magicians to be Harry Potter with rock and roll. Everything's very epic and like too cool for school sort of thing. However, I read a couple others that I think earn the other two monikers. So one of them is The Siren and the Sword, which is part of a, I don't know, it's like a 6 or 7 book series. I think the series is actually done now. They're fairly light fare, but it's a kid that goes in for, supposed to be an admissions interview with Harvard, and he accidentally stumbles into the magic school there instead, and tests his way in, so to speak. Partly by virtue of the fact that he was even able to see the building, kind of let him in. So it goes off the whole magical college thing. Pretty standard fare there. I would just say, if you are going to read it, this is the book that leans harder into the Harry Potter with sex angle. So that is worth throwing out there, that it leans harder into that. And in fact, there's even a gag in the book at one point about the various kind of magical schools that they are studying, right? Divination and so on. One of which is esoteric studies, which eventually is kind of explained in a "well, duh" moment to the main character as, yeah, that's just an almost anagram of erotic studies. They just wanted it to sound more polite in the course book, basically. So yeah, that's worth mentioning. The other, I think, was probably a stronger novel and definitely kind of sucked me in more. There's a bit more depth to it. That's Ninth House. And this one probably leans into the Harry Potter with drugs angle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
very 2014.
Yeah. I mean, it's not quite like I maybe make it sound.
It's not quite The Magicians.
No. Yeah. Well, The Magicians is the one I would say is probably Harry Potter with rock and roll. Like, now that I've read all three of these, I think I can divide up the phrase sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So Ninth House is about a girl who gets inducted into the Ninth House at Yale. So it's a play on the secret societies at Yale, you know, Skull and Bones, Lock and Key, Manuscript, so on, that they are actually, you know, magical societies in this world. And this girl who has the unusual talent to see ghosts gets inducted, drafted, borderline ordered into the Ninth House, which is the one that is kind of the who watches the watchman sort of house, supposed to keep track of everything else. It's a little bit of a darker tone compared to the others. It's a murder mystery where some things get out of hand. The unofficial motto of their house is it NMDH, no more dead hobos, which is a reference to the other societies. such as Skull and Crossbones doing things like trying to divine the stock market by reading people's entrails and then, oh, hey, they're just someone forgettable off the street. Well, we can just let them die. So their goal is to not let that kind of thing happen. But anyway, I really dug it. It's a good, slightly darker version of that type of book.
All right. Ready for major announcements?
Sure.
First, Roy has been quiet because he remembered that Henry Cavill is no longer the Witcher. And thus has chewed off his own tongue.
That makes sense.
That's exactly why I was quiet. Not because I was listening to Will talk about the books he read.
No, he bit off his own tongue. It's crazy. Next, Roy has regrown his tongue because Persona 5 Royal is out for basically every system now.
Yeah. I don't have the time to, like... Persona 5 Royal is a commitment, my friends. Like,
yeah,
I'm not playing again on the Switch. I have so many JRPGs to play. Tactical Ogre comes out next week.
That's what I was... That was the third announcement.
Then I still have not... There's not one, but two Trails games. That, like, if I started playing... What is it? Trails from Azure? Is that the one, the first one? Or is that the second one?
Zero.
Is Zero the first one?
Yeah, I believe so.
Which I have not started or bought for the Switch yet. But I was probably going to wait until winter break. Just, like, power through it in that 2 weeks. The Trails of Berseria comes out, and then they just announced in the middle of next year that they're going to be releasing the bridge game to the next series. And then I still haven't beaten. I'm probably not going to beat Diophil Chronicles anytime soon.
Just from a time thing, or you actively lost interest?
I actively lost interest.
The game is a bag of shit.
It's not a bag of shit. It's just like,
wait till you get to the end.
Many games I'm enjoying more to play. Like, I really like Trails of Arise. Like I would, if I'm going to boot up my PlayStation 5 to play a JRPG, I'd play Trails of Arise. It's fun. The characters are joyful. Playing Tales of Arise, I feel better. Like, it's a very joyful game. And I've got Last Eidolons, which I was going to talk about later, which I'm really enjoying. So, and there's a new Fire Emblem coming in January. So, like, again, there's, like, a lot of stuff. Like, Persona 5 Royal, playing it again is not on my list of stuff to do.
Oh. Cool. I'm eventually going to start Xenoblade 2, but Tactics Ogre might come first.
Tactics Ogre.
Hey, I would like to make our fourth major announcement. Will is stepping down from the players' committee of A Game of Thrones, the dead card game, in order to focus all his energy in the future into Marvel Snap.
Jesus, I was like...
Okay. I was about to be very confused and worried there.
You said that with such earnestness, Aaron.
Which is going to lead us into our new name, which is the East Coast Avengers, Snappier Sons.
I thought we said Snappin' Sons.
Snappin' Sons. That's better. Right. Snappin' is better than Snappier.
Snappin'
Sons. Snappin' Sons. So, congratulations on the rebranding and the new role.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Really, really means a lot to me. I look forward to, you know, bringing as much to the table of the Snap world as we ever brought to the Thrones world.
I think you're being actually too unkind to yourself. Game of Thrones would not have survived the transition from first edition to second edition without White Book and Beyond the Wall. Like, it just wouldn't have. Like, so FFG should have been paying you and Alex and John.
That would have been great.
But...
Wow.
But thank you. I was not being seriously introspective there. I meant that just more as another humorous dig at myself. But thank you, regardless.
Yeah.
Yes, I left you out of that, but I also left Tommy.
Who?
Kyle. Never heard of him. Who was on the show when the transition? Daryl still on the show?
Was. Yeah, I think so.
During the transition,
Daryl was not on during the transition. Greg was
really?
On.
Right. Greg was on after. Like Greg started back up when I started as a full time. Like
Daryl and I very, very rarely podcasted together. Like extremely rarely. Like we did two or three episodes ever at most.
I'm almost surprised that you did that many now that I'm really stopping to think about it.
Yeah,
but
yeah, right at the very beginning, like yeah. I was brought
I remember
as,
listening to some
as Daryl was leaving.
Aaron and Daryl episodes.
Very early.
But that could very just be early. Blurry.
Oh, look, that's a different game. Now we're starting a new game, a yeah. new podcast.
That's now, true. That's
now
true.
We are starting the Snap Judgment podcast.
So what we need to do is we need to get back on the Second Son's Twitch. Or twitch.tv/foeintel. We'll be doing our
episode my live. Twitch account.
Yes, exactly. The Second Son's Twitch account, like I said. And we're going to start doing these live. We'll have significantly less editing. And that's all we're going to talk about from now on. We don't get to watch TV or play other games anymore. Sorry, guys.
No.
No more Bucks either. It seems like it takes up too much time.
What takes up too much time?
Watching other shows and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, yeah. Okay. Anyway, I am enjoying more seriously, I am enjoying Marvel Snap. I mean, none of us are infinite players yet, so where are we to criticize anyone?
But I am basically done with Pool 2. I've got three cards left.
That's awesome. I'm about halfway through Pool 2, I think.
I'm about
how far
level
does Pool
60.
2 run again?
To 500?
No, No. Give me a sec. I'll tell you one second. A kid is messaging me. He asked a girl out, and she said yes. He's very excited. Oh, so I have to open Snap to check. But
he has to open Snap to check?
At what level I am at, and then it's like... I talked to Chris. Chris is the exact same of that level as I am. Chris Lavin is also playing. Big Chris Lavin fan. I talked to Chris Lavin, probably second most, maybe even most, in all of the X-Thrones players. We have many similar tastes.
I think it's like, is it in the late 400?
It's 470 something.
470. So I'm 100
and I need points.
Oh, wait. I'm 377 right now.
Yeah, I'm 446 and I'm level 60 or 59. I keep getting bored playing good decks and then playing bad decks and losing like 7 ranks and then playing good decks and gaining better.
Wow, this literally sounds like every other card game I've played with you.
Look, I want to have fun more than I want to be super competitive. That
speaking
is
of, did we ever even explain what that card game is for listeners?
Marvel Snap is a card game that has Marvel characters and they snap.
Okay.
Well, the characters don't, for one.
All right.
I mean, okay. You can't prove that.
That's true.
I opened it and then literally had to stop myself from starting a game. Let's get away from there.
Okay,
I'm literally playing a game right now.
All right, Jesus, I will explain the Marvel Snap. All right, Marvel Snap is the latest collectible card game from the crew that designed the original iteration of Hearthstone. So the lead designer is Ben Brode, the same lead designer of Hearthstone. So there is a lot of Hearthstone's DNA. So the way the game works is you make a 11 card, I believe it's 11 cards, right?
No, I think it's 12, right?
12 cards, 12 cards.
Yeah, 12. So it's an even number.
It's an even number.
It's 12.
12 card singleton deck. So when you get a copy of Miles Morales, that is the only copy you need to get, which is quite a nice
yeah. thing. You can use him in any number of your digital decks.
And there are three lanes. You play your cards into any of those three lanes. The goal of the game is to win two out of the three lanes using the power on your card. So each card has a cost and a power associated with it. And then, of course, cards have abilities and you mess around with stuff. But that is the basic of how it works. It is a very straight. It is an easy game to understand after playing 1 to 2 games. Like it shares that simplicity with Hearthstone can be very refreshing. I think the strategic depth of the game becomes a bit more obvious pretty quickly, I think, with Marvel Snap, because it is both a positioning and a numbers-based game. So while the game itself is very simple, I think that there's a lot of strategic thought when you try to play Snap very seriously. You could also just like literally play it as something that you're taking a shit and you want to distract yourself.
Oh, like that happens
every morning while I shit.
Yeah. It lets you do both. In a way that I think Hearthstone and Magic, when you play them on your phone, I think they demand more of your attention, even if you're trying to play a casual game of it. While Snap, you could just like drag stuff up and, you know, you will have a chance to win.
Yeah.
Explain how mana works.
All right. It's similar to Hearthstone that you get one energy per turn. So you start with one energy and then you go up to a total of six. The other thing that makes the game unique is once you hit turn six, unless an effect in the game changes it, the game ends. So you have six turns to play your cards. So it's like Hearthstone. It has that linear progression of your mana.
So you'll wind up seeing, what, 9 out of your 12 cards, right? You have an opening hand of 3, and then you draw one every turn?
Yes. And there are effects that let you draw cards. It's very easy to draw your deck.
Are no effects that let you draw your own deck. There are no cards that you can put in your deck and pull one or two that let you draw from your own deck.
But there are lots of effects that draw cards.
There are effects that draw cards. They are largely each location. There's the three locations, as Roy said. Each location has its own special ability, and it's totally randomized which you get each game, which means every game is wildly different.
Yeah, it's from a very large pool. So those locations, I think, really help the replayability. Like, even though you're playing these fast games with small 12-card decks, you know, you may pair off against an opponent who, and both of you are playing exactly the same deck, you know, two matches in a row by whatever fluke, but the different location randomization could really change the flow of that game.
Yeah. So the reason it's called Snap, though, is that it has a gambling mechanic. So in most card games, Magic or Hearthstone, if you win a match, you go up one rank. Sometimes in Magic, if you're doing best out of three, you go up two ranks. In Snap, at the end of a game, if you just don't do anything, you would go up two ranks. You get two sort of points on the ladder.
If you win.
Well,
and if you lose,
you don't go up the ranks. You get 2 points.
Towards a rank, right? So you go.
And every rank is 10 points.
It's 10 points. So you go from 4.0 to 4.2 if you win a game. But what you can do is at any point in the game, you can snap, which is double your bet of the game. So if you snap, the game will reward 4 points to the winner. And then if your opponent also snaps, it would be 8 points. The great thing about Snap as a game to play a lot of at a like competitive level where you're like trying to take a game seriously is retreating, which is withdrawing from the game, you know, is only cost you 1 point every time. So it's often in your interest to figure out when to retreat. And, you know, if a game is not going well and you just say, you know, fuck this game, you click retreat and you're out and you've only lost 1 point. You haven't significantly fallen on the ladder. You could just go right into the next game. It doesn't have that feel bad feeling that Hearthstone or particularly Magic has when you just like cue into a bad matchup and you're like, oh, I don't want to play against this stupid combo deck or this stupid aggro deck again. Well, with Snap, things don't go your way. You have a bad hand you don't like. You just like click retreat, go, boom, you're good.
See, that's so weird because that causes the opposite reaction to me. I hate the Snap mechanic, honestly. I think it feels like an awkward tack on. And like including a mechanic that incentivizes people to not play games, I think is, let's say, poor design. And is a feel bad to me to like create an incentive for me to bail. Like that just feels so bass ackwards to me. I do not enjoy it. And that's probably why I'm only hovering around like 37, 38 back and forth. Because I'm just not all into trying to optimize that and bail out of games without like trying to play it out and see what happens.
That's fair.
I like it as someone who has grinded ladders. Like, you know, I made multiple
runs. Yeah, if you were sitting down to an hour-long Thrones game, like, I can understand the appeal. But these are, like, three-minute games. Like, bailing on that, it is not, like, saving me from an hour of beating my head against a wall, you know?
Why not?
Because it's saving me from about a minute.
I like the gambling component. I feel like it adds something to the game. It makes each individual game that would feels kind of useless, it can add some stakes. And sometimes, like, and it's an extra layer strategy. When to do it, how to do it, learning who you're playing against, so on. I like it.
I also like it. Like, I understand where you're coming from, Will. Like, there's sometimes where I'm like, I just want to ignore this. But if you do want to climb, you have to. You have to pay attention to it.
Totally.
Like, that's something definitely, like, I climbed a lot more today because I've been more, like, attentive to, like, okay, I should withdraw. Like, I think there's an element of that, like, bluff. Because, like, a lot of these in these digital games, right, like, you can't bluff like you can in a Game of Thrones or Magic, right? Where, you know, you can kind of bluff with your plays, but your opponent, you know, doesn't necessarily read that, but, like, you can just snap. And that tells your opponent, you know, oh, I think this game is going to go in my favor. Or it could be bluffing, obviously. But it is a concrete action that is unignorable. You know, it's almost impossible for someone to miss, oh, that the snap happened. Unless you're truly, like, I don't know, like, watching something else and just, like, mashing buttons or something. But, like, if you're paying even the least bit of attention to it, like, it creates this added, like, level of interaction between you and your opponent that you could get in a face-to-face game that you can't get in a digital game.
Speaking of that sort of thing in the snap, you do get the full reward even if your opponent retreats, right? If you've snapped so you would get four, then they bail out?
So there's like a turn or two, like, wind up for each one where, like, it has to resolve first.
So if Glazer and I are playing, and Glazer snaps, and I'm like, oh, my hand fucking sucks. Quit. No, Glazer gets the 1 point. Glazer snaps. I'm like, I think I have an okay hand. I need to see my draw step. We play the next round. It will now go to a reward of two. So if I'm like, you know what, actually my hand still sucks, I retreat, I now lose two, Aaron wins two, but I don't lose the four.
Okay.
Does that make sense, Will?
Yes. Yeah.
It's only if you go all the way to six, or seven, if you know something changes that you lose the four or eight.
Yeah, that.
So, and it's particularly good in the last round, right? If you and your opponent have snapped, right? You're like, you know what? I just didn't draw the cards I needed. Boom. You know, you can get out, which I think is fair. Like, it's like, okay. Your opponent still gets some more reward for their good play or luck, but you don't get completely screwed. Which, I think the abilityness, the willingness to not get completely screwed is a good feeling. Again, as someone who has, like, tried to do the... Anyway, I guess I did make Mythic a few times. Like try to hit Mythic, and you're just, like, grinding, and then you hit this, like...
Wall,
and you just, like, fall. Like, if you want to avoid that, you can do that in Snap as much as possible, which I think is nice. But I think another major thing is if you've played Hearthstone, the way you interact with your opponent is much closer to Hearthstone than Magic. You can never see your opponent's hand. There's no thought seize like effect or Thrones. What's it called? Scene in Flames. Is that what the card scene called?
Yeah.
In Thrones. You know, it's very like you can play a card that pulls a card out of your opponent's hand, or, you know, you play a card and it cancels out the special abilities of your opponent's cards. And I like that interaction for a digital game. I think it strikes the right balance between avoiding those feel bad things of like, I'm going to play my Robb Stark. No. I seen in flames you. You get to pull the Robb Stark from my hand. Oh, now I don't get to play my cards. Like, I think it, but you can still sort of play cards that interact with what your opponent's doing and what their strategy is. So I like the level of interaction in Snap.
I overall agree. So, which was, you know, a very complex statement. So I'm very happy. But I do. I really think that you are correct.
I think you have the right amount of, there's a good tension between randomness and agency in the game. Of course, because it's a Ben Brode game, there's still a few times that RNGesus just takes the wheel. And you can't, like, he cannot help himself. Like, he just loves those effects too much. But the nice thing about Snap is, like, oh, I one of the locations is the, like, you play out of your opponent's deck, or you get 10 random cards instead of your deck.
I super just be like, hate that one.
Well, Will, you can just say, fuck that noise, press retreat.
I know.
And leave, and you just go back into a game. You don't have to.
And I do, but then that makes me question, like, I'm sure that is incredibly common, which makes me question the design acumen in making that location.
I don't think it's that common. Like, I play
them out usually. I don't love them, but, like,
I'm
willing to see a different, like, experience. Oh, shit.
I played about 18 or 19 games today, and I never encountered it once. So I think it's weighted.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, it is not common that I've run into it by any means, but when I do, I'm just like, why?
But
it's somewhat more common, and I mind the deck switching one less because I assume at least that my opponent has some cohesive plan for their deck, not just WTF.
I mean, usually.
Yeah. But it's a combination of, it in some ways, actually, Artifact and Hearthstone.
Artifact. Now there is a name I've not heard in a very long time.
But, I mean, the three lanes, they stole that from Artifact.
I mean, which stole it from any dime a dozen MOBA at this point, but I guess originally Dota, right?
Yeah, I mean, laning, but, like, that's not the same thing as in a card game, right? Like,
well, not, like, 100% the same, no, but, like, it shows a pretty clear inspiration path, I think.
That's fair. But, overall, I guess the next major thing, and this is why our friend of the show, good friend of Aaron and mine, Jonathan Andrews, does not like the game, is the most controversial thing, I guess, about the game is the collection mechanic. So you cannot, so the games are, or not game, excuse me, cards are released in three pools of cards. So there's a sets, starter
sort
sets,
of.
Sets, yeah. but they're not sets in the sense of, like, Thrones or Magic, right? Because you can't buy the cards you want. So you, right, your account goes into this pool of cards, and then the order in which you receive those cards is entirely randomized. So let's say, this is just made up, say pool one has 30 cards. You can get any of those 30 cards every time you level up your pool. And it could be you get all the shitty cards, and then the last six cards you get are the good ones. It could be, you know, like my pool one was very feast or famine, where I went like, oh yeah, that's an awesome pool, that's an awesome pool. Then it's like, oh, no. Oh, yeah. But Glazer, on the other hand, he just seems to get all the good cards, like, right away.
That's true. Thank you for that.
But this is very controversial. The goal of it is to slow down the card acquisition. Like, it is a purposeful design goal, is to slow down the card acquisition of players, to sort of force you to sort of play through these pools of cards, to not just allow whales to come in and just buy the best cards and just roll people from day one. They want you to go through a set of experiences with these cards. The nice thing about the way their system is set up is, you can create a timeline as a free-to-play player to get all the cards. It's going to take you longer, but not significantly longer. It takes you, I think the way they've calculated it, it takes you about 3 months to get all the cards. which is pretty good actually compared to say like how long it would take you to get a standard collection in Magic if you were playing free to play Arena, and you weren't like a pro Magic player level of skill, right? Or, you know, many, or Hearthstone, right? As someone who played free to play Hearthstone for a long time, it took me basically until the end of every single standard rotation for me to get the full, not even the full set of cards, like two competitive decks as a free to play player. The game is very friendly to dolphins, which are people who are willing to spend some money, but not like a huge amount, which is myself.
I was going to say that's probably me.
10 a month. Right.
Yeah, it's like about $10.
Just spend $10 a month, you'll be fine.
Yeah, which is for the season pass.
Keep buying the battle pass.
Yeah, which I think is a reasonable thing to pay for this kind of game.
It's fundamentally a subscription model.
Yeah,
I'm totally for it.
But there is definitely the feeling of when you grind up your account level to get a new card. It definitely feels like you're opening a pack. Like I do get that excitement of like cracking a Magic pack of like, okay.
I just got the draw from opponent's decks thing.
Like, I enjoy that. Like, as someone who buys two boxes of Magic cards every Magic release, like, I like those endorphins. They feel good. So, but I get people like John who are like, I want to play the meta decks. Why can I not take out the strongest card in all card games, my credit card, and get the cards I want?
I mean, he can speed that up significantly ish if he wanted to.
It's still a month, but, by the way.
Yeah, still a month. But the thing, like, okay, so you're getting this stuff by playing the game and upgrading your cards, right? And it's all cosmetic upgrades. You get, the game confusingly calls them boosters, which are just points to upgrade the cards. And the card shop does have a rotating kind of set of cards that you can auto level up by paying the in-game currency. But yeah, you can't just go straight from zero to end. Even those mechanics, like there's a cap on like the credits you can buy in a day. There's a cap on how many of those upgrades show up a day. That it's coming from somebody that played Diablo Immortal a few months back. This is surprisingly un-money grubby in comparison to a lot of mobile games.
No, it's I think a very it's as far as a free to play experience, it's fair. Like, it's not as exploitive. I mean, like, they specifically, as Will said, cap the amount of money you can put into the game in any day. There's a hard cap.
Yeah.
So, no, even Elon Musk, you know, can only get so far in Marvel Snap at any given time, which I think is a good. Like, I think it, at the end of the day, is good. I think it will create a sort of, particularly at the beginning, right? Like a lot of these games, you saw this with like Arena, right?
Mm-hmm.
People who were in the beta with Arena were just able to roll over people who weren't in the beta, who were just starting to play Arena at the beginning, right? And this system sort of like keeps them apart and allows the new player experience to be much more friendly to new players and more organic than I think any other like card game that I have played virtually. So much so that Clemens is playing it right now.
Nice.
But so Glazer, do you want to talk through some basic strategy stuff here for anybody who might be interested?
I feel like that's a later thing. Like we just want to cover the existence of the game and like what it is at this point. But that said, there is a lot of strategy. I'm at the end of pool 2 after about 3 weeks of playing, and all I did was put in that original $10. It's not like I'm wailing here. Like, it's really, really friendly to players how you can get stuff here. Like, none of this is asking too much of me. That's going to lose me the game. Sorry, I'm in the middle of a game too. But in the meantime, let's not lose four. Sorry, I'm trying to talk about it while I'm playing it. I've got currently, I'm actually going to check this physically, like in about 3 weeks, putting in, I think I put in $13. I got the new player pass too.
Yeah, that was a really good value, I thought.
It was good value, and it had a sweet variant for cap, so. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. So, I've got, 16 decks, 17 decks?
On deck slots?
I would assume kind of so, but I don't really know. But I'm at 16 decks.
50 or 100.
So. Like, there's enough stuff to do at two pools for 16 decks. That's pretty impressive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, some are better than others, some are more competitive than others, but all of them can win various games. It's just, it's really well designed. I don't know have a much better way to say it than that, but it's really, really well designed, how the progression system works, and how, like, since there's only 12 cards, each one feels like it's really important.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's There's cards that just smooth out your curve. That's, like, literally what they do. There's a card that will always show up on turn one, one that'll always show up on turn two, one that'll always show up on turn six. And they're not super strong, but they're still really cool, right? Like, yeah. There's just a lot of different options for stuff. And I really, really, really approve of options for stuff.
And I think what they do is...
I've got a real problem, though.
What is that?
For reasons I'm not clear on... I am playing almost entirely pool three players at this point.
It's because you're so close to the end of you're so close to the end of the pool, my friend.
Yeah, I don't it starts pairing you at all.
So I think what we have, so also the game is themed around Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this theming is successful. Most of the cards I think feel like some version of the character from the comics.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few misses. There's a few misses, like Cyclops.
Like, yeah, Cyclops is weak. I mean, the whole Guardians, like, they have a neat little inherent, like, theme, I guess, but...
They're the only ones with a theme, right?
Right, like, right. But, like, it doesn't really evoke those characters to me. But others, like, say, Elektra or, like, Captain America, like, really nail it, so... It's, I mean, about
Spider-Man,
what I
expect for a Beast.
It's back and forth.
I think it's about the level of Thrones. Like, of, like, how
I the character... a little better. Very few characters in Thrones felt like anything.
I don't... I think... I actually think second edition was actually better about that.
Way than better about the
I mean, that
first was embarrassingly bad.
I think it's partially because Nate learned after, how many years he was working in that game. And I think Danny cared more than Nate did. So Nate was better a design. I think Nate was a better thematic designer in second edition, and then Danny cared more about theme. So I think both of the designers in second edition were good about that. But anyway, but there's your Thrones content about the card game. But I like, and it's a good mix of like well-known characters that you like want, right? And I think they do a good mixture of like you play, like Captain America is a good card, right? That you want to play. Like Iron Man is a great card that you get at the beginning of the game that is playable up to the end of the game, right?
Oh no.
But that you see streamers play. But also there's obscure characters that you probably never heard of, like Arrow. I have no idea. I had to look up that guy. I was like, who the hell is Arrow? Like,
all I can think is the CW show.
Yeah, me too. Or like some of your obscure favorites, like what's the Spider-Man
Stilt
villain?
Man? Tell me, Stiltman is in.
Stiltman's not in it yet, but who's the Spider-Man villain? Carrion, like that was from Maximum Carnage. He's the discard card, like the collector, like
Hellcow. Evidently, is a
thing. Hellcow is a card. Yeah,
never heard Hellcow's of before really seeing it card. In this game.
I had it, but yeah, like there are. Like, they do a good job of pulling from the Marvel pool. You know, there's still some characters who don't have cards. So, but you're mostly waiting for their movies. So, like, conveniently, back in the beta, Thor wasn't a card until Love and Thunder came out. Surprise, surprise. Right? And then Black Panther's not a card, but we're getting a new season pass in a week. And what movie is coming out? Right? Like, you know, so I think over time, characters are going to be, you know, going to be added. So I'm just impressed. I think it's in a very well-designed game that I think is capable, will probably hold my attention for the foreseeable future as sort of the casual, as the card game, the virtual card game I play.
Yeah. No, I think this hits a sweet spot as well for me with the digital card games. It feels so kind of quick and almost casual that I don't have enough time to miss the level of human interaction that I usually want in a card game. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I can actually play it at work, right? Like, I can take a break. But I can take a break for like 5 to 10 minutes, play like 3 or 4 games. Mm-hmm. Unlike, say, Arena, right, on my phone. Like, if I took out Arena at work, like, that was me really slacking off. It wasn't an honest brain break, right? Of like, okay, I've done a bunch of work. I need to decompress. I'm stressed. I'm going to play some Snap and feel a little better. Boom, go back to work, which is what I did like 3 or 4 times during my playing periods today. Arena was like, okay, I'm really just like, I got to hide from my coworkers, put it up against my laptop. Why are they like, why are you scrolling like this? Like, same with Hearthstone, right? Like, I think it is legitimately a game you could take a shit and play. Unlike, again, Arena, where if you got it in a control versus control mirror, your feet were going to fall asleep, like on the toilet.
Or maybe the automatic lights are going to turn out.
Yeah, the automatic lights are going to turn off. Yeah.
Wow, Dracula just beat me. Playing against tier 3 decks is not fun right this second. Sorry.
That's okay.
So, short of that, this is the first real complaint I've had about the game, which just happens to be under. Like, I've enjoyed basically everything. I am not enjoying that because I'm close to tier 3. I will play cards that are tier 3, which I cannot access and are thus kicking my ass.
You know, that does, in a roundabout way, remind me of one of the other kind of interesting broad stroke things that's probably worth mentioning, which is like pairing in the game. With games this quick, I think you might guess that having very fast matchmaking is also very important. And the game succeeds in that, some by being fairly generous with up and down pairing, as Aaron is running into, but also they also have a very generous use of bots in the game, which is kind of fascinating to me.
Only low level, I think. I don't think bots are actually high level generally.
Generally, yes, but it does really help smooth things out, right? Like in the lower end, in a progression system like this, the lower end is where you want those bots to help smooth things out, because people are going to progress and clump up at the, you know, higher levels and not just stay at the lower ones. So like it helps the newbies still have the quick and easy matches. Well, maybe not always easy. Like, some of the bots are actually pretty good, but compared to what I expect in a game like this anyway. Just nice. Like, I never wait more than like 30 seconds for a match, which is pretty cool.
You do play bots, though. I know Aaron doesn't believe me, but you do play a lot of bots.
I believe you, Roy.
I'm gonna test. I just emoted to the person I'm playing right now. We'll see if they emote back.
That doesn't. Okay.
Well, the bots will never emote. So
yeah.
It raises your chance to slightly above 50% that it's not a bot if they don't emote.
Oh. Well, that was
sad. Yeah, I think this is, I think, a pretty thoroughgoing discussion. If you are interested in more Marvel Snap content, please email Will. What is your email address for White Book?
contact@whitebookpodcast.com.
There we go. Let us know. Or comment on the Facebook post in which this is posted on your various social media platform sites that are Facebook.
And find us next Tuesday at twitch.tv/foeintel, where we will be doing a live podcast.
Do you actually want me to talk about Lost Eidolons for a bit, or are we done?
I'm curious what the fuck it is.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
All right. Lost Eidolons. It was actually Glazer that pressured me into saying he doesn't like know what it is, but it is a independent strategy RPG made by a Korean developer.
Oh,
yeah. And it is very much like...
This is what I sent you all the reviews of.
Yes.
This sounded like it was made for you.
It was, yes. It is if someone stole the Fire Emblem IP, but they did it when they read a bunch of Game of Thrones novels before, Song of Ice Fire novels before, like, to cover that they stole Fire Emblem. At its core, its strategy is very Fire Emblem. Its game systems are very Fire Emblem Three Houses. But with more, I guess, a bit more maybe like awakening sort of in how the battles are structured. There is a version of the weapon triangle, but instead of weapons, it's like weapon against armor. So like axe is good against strong armor, while sword is better against weaker armor, while arrows are good against wizards. And so like it's not like sword beats lance, lance beats axe, axe beats sword. Right, did I do that right? No, sword beats axe, axe beats lance, lance beats sword. That's how the weapon triangle works in Fire Emblem. But it's close enough. If you like squint, you're like, oh, you stole that from Fire Emblem. There's also like a gift mechanic to your party members. There is classes that you like get experience points and level that up, which then unlocks better classes with better abilities. And you can switch between the different classes for your characters based on, like, if your character shoots their bow a bunch, it unlocks the bow-based classes. They swing their sword, it unlocks the sword-based classes. The thing is, so if you read reviews on Steam, there's two things that people criticize it for. One is a legitimate thing. The core original release of the game, what sort of separates it from Fire Emblem, is it gives you a turn limit. It's very generous, but it is a turn limit. So, like, I'm on chapter 5 or 6. They give you 20 turns, which is more than enough. I've never lost because I ran out of turns. I've lost because I did a bad strategy. So that's legitimate criticism. The developers have since gotten, like, allowed you to play in a unlimited turn mode. But they kept in the mechanic. So the mechanic before was, like, if you beat it in fewer turns, you get more XP rewards. They kept that mechanic, but now you have unlimited turns. So if you want to just, take as long as you want to beat a map, you now can. Or you can keep it with the turn limit. That's a legitimate criticism. The other one is the story. So the theming of this is very Game of Thrones. Like, the characters look like a Western, like, RPG style Witcher, like a Game of Thrones video game. But the writing is a Fire Emblem game. Like, so if you are some Western role-playing game player who's on Steam, like, oh, this could be some dark, gritty story. It's not. It's not dark and gritty. It's just Fire Emblem with a George R. R. Martin skin. It's like, what if the designers of Fire Emblem wrote Game of Thrones fan fiction, right? It is... Like, the protagonist is fundamentally a nice dude. He wants to help people. The party all, like, people are obsessed with meat. It's all the tropes of this sort of, like, South Asian entertainment sphere. If you realize that, you're like, oh, okay. Like, it's just an anime strategy game, but instead of characters looking like anime characters, they look like Western RPG characters. You'll enjoy it a lot. Like, it's at the same level of writing as sort of a mid-tier Square Enix game, mid-tier Nintendo RPG. That's the story. The battles, the map design is not super great in the first 6 chapters, like, on a, like, creativity level. Like, there's not, like, cool map designs that you move around, but there are cool strategy elements. So it's closer to Three Houses in that way, which, like, Three Houses didn't have, like, where you're like, oh man, these maps are like really cool looking. There were some, but most of them were just kind of like, I don't know, you march your troops towards their troops and then you fought. But there were cool, there were maps where, like, there ended up being strategic decisions and sort of where reinforcements were, or like how you needed to aggro certain groups, and you could easily get overwhelmed if you aggroed the group wrong, these kind of things. Like, that's where the strategy is mostly. It's like, right now, this could change. I'm, again, I'm only about 6 missions, and I just kind of, I think, unlocked all the camp features. If you, like, positioning is the central strategic thing. And definitely the last mission took me like 3 or 4 hours because I screwed up positioning really bad and had to restart. So there's, I'd give the strategy sort of, if like, what's the game that Glazer and I bounced off of? Diafield Chronicles is the worst of modern strategy.
Ooh.
And then, because there was like no strategy to Diafield Chronicles.
No, very, very easy game.
And then, like, Triangle Strategy is, like, the most. Like, I think it's had the best map designs of any modern. And then, like, Three Houses is sort of, like, towards the middle?
Yeah.
I would put it, like, slightly below Three Houses right now. Yeah. So it's good. Like, it's good. But it, you know, it definitely, and I think they put most of their work into making combat smooth. Like, the combat is really smooth. And so I'm impressed so far. I would definitely prop it. Like, it's the game that's like my number one priority besides Snap. So, like, since I finished this big work thing, like, I've been able to take it easy this week. I've been playing a lot of it and I've been really enjoying it.
Interesting.
I'd be playing it right now if we weren't doing this podcast.
Yeah, I'm definitely. Oh, that game.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and I think the last thing on here is Will, right?
Yeah, yeah, that one is Twilight War with a bit of a after text here of Aurora. So the reason for that is so way back at this point in February, ran a Kickstarter for another tabletop RPG, for a supplement rather, for the first one that I published, which was titled Party First. This supplement was Twilight War. Took this kind of pseudo 80s, you know, horror world into a deeper kind of Cold War spy sort of vibe. And so one of the stretch goals was actually to create an app for the game, or a game based on the game, so to speak. It's a phone game. It's an adventure game where you play, let's say, a somewhat willing test subject in a mysterious experiment, and kind of play your way through unlocking hidden codes and the like. It does connect to some codes hidden in the book itself, but is fully playable without. So if you were a fan of older kind of, you know, mystery adventure games like, say, Myst and Riven, like that sort of genre, then I think this would be right up your alley and be kind of a fun introduction to the world of Party First. So you can look it up in 3 different places now. It is out on the Google Play Store as Twilight War. It is out on the Apple iStore, their store. And that one is where it also has Aurora at the end. So it is Twilight War Aurora, because someone had already taken the Twilight War name. And if you ever hang out on itch.io, there's actually a fully playable web version embedded there on that site. So totally free to play. And if you want a cool, atmospheric, moody, light horror adventure game, check it out. And, you know, if you like the world, go buy the books that relate to that, because those actually make some money for me.
Nice. All right. Do it.
Go do the Will thing, but also welcome to our new podcast.
Exactly.
Oh, snap. Are we in the danger zone?
Oh, we are.
Much danger, very zone. Slops to Roy Rogers.
Wow. Okay.
Roy alone.
He really did go there.
Props to recliners.
We're apparently Aaron's going to be sleeping tonight, so.
I'm sleeping in a recliner. Maybe it's going to be hard to get up out of this one. Shut up. It's not funny. It's a little funny.
It wouldn't be funny if you hadn't said you slopped me for caring about your health and safety, Aaron. So
I don't care about my health and safety.